Mayor Lenny Curry will take his sales tax proposal to the voters this summer. OneSpark throws a much smaller party downtown, but still brings in 70,000 people. And the U.S. Surgeon General challenges the First Coast to get fit and lose weight. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from the University of North Florida. This is First Coast Connect on the go today. Yes, coming to you live for the full hour from the 5th annual Generation W Women's Leadership Conference. More about that from founder Donna Orender in just a moment. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and just ahead, all of the news of the week with our Friday roundtable. Plus, Gen W's own Donna Orender and today's one-tank trip. Then later, we'll tell you about the USS Adams drop boat race. All of that and more ahead. In a moment, Donna Orender will join us, but first, it's Friday, and that means time for our weekly media roundtable. Here today, Mark Woods of the Florida Times-Union. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics with us once again.
Good morning, Melissa.
Claire Goforth, editor of Folio Weekly.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good to see you, and our own WJCT analyst, John Burr.
Great to be here.
So good to have you all with us here on the UNF campus. Plenty of news from the week to discuss, from a smaller OneSpark event to Journey to One, as the mayor and the U.S. Surgeon General challenged the city to collectively lose 1 million pounds. Can they do it? Can we do it? We'll talk about that. But first this morning, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry says he's going to ask local voters to decide this summer, in August, whether or not to approve a half-cent sales tax to pay off the city's massive pension debt. Now, this would be a high-stakes referendum, and it would go a long way towards solving some of the city's biggest financial woes. The question is, can Curry get the voters to sign off on this? A.G. Gankarski, as you've written, this will be a major test of the mayor's political capital.
Yes, it is. It's going to be the big enchilada for Mayor Lenny Curry. His political team has confidence in his personal favorability and his name ID numbers. Those are great. Says it's good with Republicans and Democrats. But here's the issue. This is one that the elites are going to love. The elites are basically going to say, yes, we need this done. We need to get this done. But what about the populists? What about the 50% of Republicans, give or take, that voted for Donald Trump? You know, what about the Democrats who feel like they are pushed off of boards, in deference to Curry's personal vision, but they see it as a partisan thing? John Delaney got up to 57% with his in 2000, but, John Delaney also offered infrastructural payoffs. What does this offer? This offers paying off the credit card. So yeah. It's going to be an interesting sell for the next 4 months. I do want to say that the August choice of a primary for the referendum is interesting because it's going to limit the voter universe. Independents are not going to come out and vote unless they're interested in voting only in the referendum.
Claire Goforth, he's got 5 months to sell this plan to the voters. That's a short window of time.
It is, but he's been pretty successful so far in getting the word out about this plan, getting voters educated about how important it really is to start to pay off this pension debt, because the city's credit rating is suffering, and moving on long term, we really do have to come up with a solution to the pension woes. I mean, at this point, we could talk a lot about who's to blame, and there is definitely a lot of blame to go around, but the most important thing is to be proactive. I agree with AG completely that it's a very wise choice probably to have the August election, the August vote, because you're going to get a different voter turnout than you're going to get for the national election come November. Statistically, we'll have the highest voter turnout in November, so you're going to get really engaged voters in August. That could go one way or the other for the mayor, but I tend to believe it'll probably be in the favor of the plan passing.
Mark Woods, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting to echo what everybody else has said. But it does seem like this is probably the most palatable. I don't think property taxes that would have happened. I don't think, and here it's, whether it's a new tax, a repurposed tax, however you want to phrase it, it doesn't change the tax tomorrow, the next day. It just continues it further. And I think to the general public, that's probably a much easier sales pitch. Now, it's never an easy sales pitch when you're talking taxes. So, yes, it will be interesting, and the August element does make it interesting also.
And John Burr, as you've long pointed out, if this isn't dealt with one way or another, the city's financial picture is just going to keep getting worse and worse.
Oh, for sure. Lenny is all in on this. I mean, everything in city government seems to have just grind to a halt with a, you know, just an exclusive focus on this one issue. I mean, there's no help for downtown. There's, you know, nothing's moving. So whether that's by strategy, by design, or, you know, whatever, but he has put all his eggs in this basket. He really has.
Now, speaking of downtown, something was moving this week. It was the much smaller One Spark Festival, but it still brought in 70,000 people to the urban core. In its fourth year, One Spark was basically turned into Spark Walk, combining with the Wednesday Night Art Walk. A big change from the six-day-long affair participants have enjoyed in the past, but still, 70,000 came out for Spark Walk. Now it has much more of a focus on financial sustainability and the original goal of funding startups. But Claire Goforth, I think that even the organizers were surprised by how many people came out for this.
You know, it was pretty surprising. Even early in the day, there was a really strong crowd out in the streets for One Spark at noon on Wednesday, which definitely was not the result of Art Walk, because that begins later on in the afternoon. I would definitely think that it's a good thing for Jacksonville. And people were so proud of One Spark. I believe that's what drove the attendance on Wednesday.
Yeah, and just judging by the feedback, people had a good time.
Yeah, I mean, they did have a good time. I was down there early in the day. I saw Michael Munns and Peter Rummel. They were, you know, very happy about how it was going. Saw a lot of local politicians pressing the flesh. You know, it was a good little party. And, you know, maybe once we get the pension deal dealt with, we can make downtown more energetic in that way, more than just one day a year.
Mark Woods, you wrote a column calling it One Spark 0.04, I think, or 0.4, not One Spark 2.0. So there was some disappointment it was smaller.
Yeah, I would say that's what it is. That it wasn't. Yeah, that yesterday I think illustrated how much people crave this and have an appetite for it. It was, yeah, the streets were packed and everybody wanted to be there and we want things like this. I think there was a disappointment that it didn't stretch. It was just a Wednesday. Like, for instance, if you want to go out as a family, I remember the vibe on a Saturday years ago was you'd walk down, there's little kids and there's parents and there's teenagers, and that's just, you know, it was a school day. That's not going to happen on a Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah.
So I think the disappointment is that I don't think it needs to be 6 days, but if we can have some in between, a three-day festival.
Sure, a happy medium. John.
Right.
There's an interesting thing going on here. We in the media, and I think the public at large, kind of judge One Spark by the attendance. And, you know, talking to Peter Rummel and the organizers this year, the attendance wasn't all that important to them. They wanted to get back to the business elements of One Spark.
Right.
They wanted to talk about and promote entrepreneurial endeavors in Jacksonville and talk about how to create a culture of entrepreneurship in Jacksonville. So, you know, everybody's interested in the street festival part of it, but the guys who are really putting on the show wanted to pivot around to a whole different thing, really their original vision for One Spark.
Now let's talk about another big event happening in Jacksonville this week. If you're just tuning in, we are broadcasting live for the full hour this morning from the 5th annual Generation W event on the UNF campus. And we're joined right now by Generation W founder Donna Orender. Hey, congratulations on 5 years of success. And a huge crowd here today on the campus.
Isn't it wonderful? This place is just humming with inspiration. It's really quite exciting, and it's thrilling to have you here. You know, it's so great. I could just walk out in the hallway and listen to you, instead of having you on while I'm in the shower.
And you can just kind of step right over and be on the air. How about that?
This is very convenient. I'd like to do this like
every
Friday,
day.
Melissa.
We'll just come to your house from now on. We'll set this up every morning. No,
you guys are great.
So tell us a little bit about what's on tap for today.
Well, you know, Admiral Mary Jackson, who's the head of the Navy Southeast, just spoke, and now there's a military panel called Mission to Serve. And it's about women on the front lines. And I have just stepped out of that. It is fascinating in terms of not only the issues that face women, but the global evolution of our military. I think when Admiral Jackson said, there was a graphic that said, freedom is not free. And the macro mission of our military, which is to keep us safe, it just puts life in perspective. Because we all know that these are very, you know, they're times that give us concern.
Yeah. That's one incredible speaker that you've lined up for today, but there's a whole slate of speakers and events going on with the goal of fostering a culture of women's leadership.
And, yeah, it's about women's leadership and inclusion. I am thrilled today that we have so many men. We have men who've flown in from different companies from around the country who want to participate because this is very much a we effort. Pat Garrity, the CEO of Florida Blue and Guidewell, when he opened up, he was part of this opening, basically said, we talk about women's issues, but we talk about human issues. And I think that when we get to the humanity of really where the lives we want to live, it's about understanding how other people think and live so that we could create better workforces, we can improve our talent, we improve ourselves, all of the things that I think we all aspire to.
And how do you feel over the last 5 years you've changed the conversation in this area? And also it's a national event around these issues.
It is a national event. I mean, our speakers are from all over the country. We have about 10 companies that are from outside of Jacksonville in addition to the companies that are here. Listen, I love Jacksonville. I am a big believer that we can lead, in terms of thought leadership. And the fact that people come here and support the way they do, that we have these very high-level discussions. This afternoon we'll have, I think, a very moving discussion on trust, right? In a time where it is incredibly incendiary in communities, right? How do you build trust to move to a level of being able to govern and live together? And elevate your educational systems, all those things. And the panel that we've put together this afternoon is extraordinary.
Lots of great speakers. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of what goes into this, finding the most dynamic, compelling speakers.
Right. This is, it's funny. I was thinking about this morning on the way. There's nobody here that's come with a canned speech.
Uh-huh.
Everybody here prepares specifically, and there's an authenticity and an openness that happens between all of the attendees and the speakers that just transcends what you might find anywhere else. And I'm only speaking that because that's the feedback that we get, and we are very proud of that feedback.
Well, we thank you so much for giving us a few minutes. I know it's a packed agenda for you today. How about a hand for Donna Orender of Generation W?
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
give yourself a hand.
I want to give you all a hand for being here. I'm a huge, huge fan of what you do because I think every single day you bring our community home to us, and I don't ever want to miss it.
All right. Well, thank you. I look forward to some of the speakers that are be coming up later today. I'll see you inside later.
Melissa, and everybody here, Mark, everybody. I'm putting you on the spot now, guys, because, hey, why not? Thank you.
And so that's Donna Orender going back into the auditorium for Generation W. We are here live today from this fifth annual event. Now, she mentioned the military and their presence here. It was interesting this week to see the U.S. Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, come to town in full military dress uniform to join Mayor Curry and others to talk about improving this area's health. Mission 1 Million launched this week. It's a new effort to get the whole area to collectively lose 1 million pounds. And then at the same time, Mayor Curry's new Journey to One initiative is seeking to move Duval County from 48th in Florida's county health rankings to number one. That's a pretty ambitious goal. A.G. Gankarski, the mayor, saying let's get people out walking and exercising. That's of course a worthy goal. It's hard to do, though, in one of the least walkable cities in America.
Yes, that was something the Surgeon General brought up in a speech at the I'm a Star Foundation at the Prime Osborne Center yesterday. Also something that was brought up during the press conference. Walkability, eliminating food deserts, all these things are key. Getting Jacksonville from 48 to 1, that's going to be a real challenge given, the way we have our food distribution in the city. The fact that we're so reliant on fast food and driving and all of these things, it's going to be a tough one. But, a lot of the Jacksonville Journey stuff, like, redoing street lights in some of the more rundown neighborhoods and, fixing sidewalks and things like that, those are things supposed to drive people getting out and making healthy choices. And, this is something that the Surgeon General said, prevention is the thing that people need to do because a culture of prevention basically saves on healthcare costs, saves on negative outcomes, all these things we worry about.
And Mark Woods, the mayor, said he's going to lead by example. He's going to be out there exercising and setting the example for everybody else. How powerful do you think that symbolism will be?
I think it's wonderful. I think it's great that he's doing that. And I was thinking about the first time I think I probably met him was years ago. He always works out at the Downtown Y. And I said when he became mayor, I was hoping that he would still be there. And he still squeezes that in. And I think that's great. I would never criticize a mayor. I think everybody should try and find that time. This big issue, I think it's wonderful, this initiative too, but I kind of think about where does government fit in and keeping people healthy? And it's an interesting debate, and I've always thought, like, I don't necessarily agree with like something like Mayor Bloomberg in New York when the, you know, downsizing the sodas. But I think
and there, taxing sugary drinks.
Right.
And,
I think there is a role for government to help with the its cities, communities' health. And I think that is what we've talked about, making cities more walkable. That, you know, you as an individual can't necessarily make the city more walkable, but that's what the government, or, you know, more friendly to bikes and those kind of things. So I think combine this initiative to get people out there with also doing those kind of things that we Jacksonville has not been good at historically.
John Burr, when you look at and Claire Goforth, when you look at the county health rankings, I think St. John's County's number one, right next door to Duval, which is 48. It's not a good look. So huge disparities.
Yeah, and that's the same as in public education. The same
right.
same disparity. If Lenny is going to lead us toward that million-pound reduction, I don't think he can really contribute much to it. He's in great shape. He might get a pound or two off. But
there's some, yeah, the rest of us could probably lose a little more. Claire?
I mean, a million pounds for a city of a million is pretty simple. It's a pound a person. So, I mean, everyone just don't drink water. Don't listen to me. But, I mean, it's pretty simple to lose 1 pound. But I do like the symbolism of the mayor leading by example on this. It is a little disappointing to see that there's no city spending for the initiative. So it's really just, you know, it's positive lip service, and that's a good thing, but if we're not going to actually spend money on fixing the sidewalks and try to improve the walkability of our city, then, I mean, what are we asking people to do, to go out and walk and potentially get hit by a car? I mean, that's reality.
And get hit by a car driving, too.
That
happened to me today. But, you know, really...
Thanks for showing up even after being in a car accident this morning, by the way.
Iron Man. but, you know, here's the thing. You know, we do have a stake as a city in these health outcomes because look at UF Health. You know, we're worried about UF Health funding and, you know, so many of the people who are in the worst physical condition, you know, are also the poorest people because they don't get the right food, they don't get the right exercise. They might work two or three jobs that preclude all of that, and they're using the ER as primary care. A second point to bring up, it ties into the pension tax referendum. This is an easy political win. This is a way for Curry, without spending any money whatsoever, but investing political capital, saying, look, I am with y'all, one city, one Jacksonville. We're going to get in shape together, have marathons, all of that. Curry's going to lead walking tours throughout the city. And, you know, these are the type of things that you do when you want to, you know, boost your personal favorability ratings when you're trying to sell, you know, a referendum that's going to have impact till 2060.
And there is a business perspective to all this. The guys who run the barbecue places around town are scared to death. and the health store owners are just jumping for joy at all the new business they're going to get in Jacksonville, Florida.
I don't think barbecue is
low
calories.
Carb.
Now, you mentioned school funding, the disparities in different counties around the state, John. As the Florida Times Union reports this morning, a new national study of how states pay for education has flunked Florida, giving Florida an F and ranking us near the bottom of states in how we allocate our tax dollars for education. The study is called Is School Funding Fair? America's Most Fiscally Disadvantaged School District, and it ranks Florida 42nd for education funding per student and 49th for the number of teachers per 100 students. And we have also seen the second steepest decline in education funding overall over the last decade or so. Mark Woods, this is at odds with Tallahassee's basic line that they've beefed up funding for public schools.
Well, they beefed up funding after
cutting it.
Slashing. So
right.
Yeah, so we've gone from really, really, really low to really, really low. You know, this is nothing shocking about this or new. This has been the case for quite a while, and it'd be nice to see us do more here.
And the study is also interesting in that it gave Florida a C grade for how it distributes money among high poverty and low poverty schools. That gets to your point about the disparities, big disparities you see between a county like Duval and a county like St. John's. Anybody?
But, yeah. You know, and that's the thing. If you break Duval down into the school district actually by representative, you've got some places that are doing really well in the county, some places that aren't. The zones that have the most poverty are the ones that have the least funding and the worst outcomes. So, you know, school funding does tie in. And, you know, if you followed our school board at all, it is entirely dysfunctional. It's basically split up, you know, 4-3 on any given vote. Vitti's vision, which, you know, many people, especially the elites in the city, see as very visionary and issue after issue, is roundly rejected by, you know, 2 or 3 people on that school board. So you have outcome issues, and you basically have a split personality with that school board.
Claire.
Yeah, that's true. I'd be interested to see how someone may try to blame Superintendent Vitti for the F grade, even though obviously it's not his fault. And it's really shameful that we're funding the schools that need the most help the least. We should really take a hard look at what that says about our values, our priorities. And if we're leaving these kids that are already socioeconomically disadvantaged with less funding to help them advance in life, I mean, what are we telling them? We're telling them they don't matter, and that is just not acceptable.
If you're just tuning in, it's our media roundtable this Friday, but we're live today from UNF's Generation W event for the full hour. We also want to make note of another headline that caught our eye this week as JEA leaders held a workshop Thursday on their proposal to expand solar power production. The idea is to triple JEA's solar power capability, but reduce rates at the same time so that future customers would pay when their private solar rooftop panels send back excess energy to the power grid. Environmental activists and solar businesses in Florida have been very critical of this plan. They say it would crush the business model for installing rooftop solar. Mark Woods, have you been following this? What are your thoughts?
Somewhat. So I'm hardly the expert on it, but it's this net metering where you have your personal solar power on your roof and you get a certain amount for what you put back into the grid, and they want to reduce the amount that they've been paying per kilowatt hour while also increasing their own farms, their own solar power. To me, the big picture, as someone who doesn't have that on my roof, I don't have this personal anything personally vested in it, but I want to see whatever will bring more solar power. I read something about the cost has come down since 2009 to install. It's 70% lower. So we, you know, anybody who says this isn't, you know, it's just pie in the sky, it's going to happen eventually somehow that we're going to make this more and more viable. So I guess that's the big picture thing I want to see happen is us to be tapping into that.
Claire, go forth.
Yes, and what JEA is doing is decreasing the rate they pay from 11 cents, which is a one-to-one rate, to 7 cents, which is a substantial reduction and seems to be based on just their desire to raise funds. You know, it does disincentive the solar industry on some level. I would not say that it's going to crush the industry. I think the industry stakeholders are making a mistake in saying that this is going to crush them. It is interesting to see that yesterday when JEA's board had presentations, the USGBC and other stakeholders who are very passionate about environmental issues had requested to be allowed to present, and they were denied. They did not allow any public comment. So yesterday the board basically heard from someone from JEA about why they're going to do this. Another interesting point is that JEA is going to increase how much solar they're producing. And what I've heard is that they're going to start producing solar power, and if you want that solar power, you're going to pay more for it than you're paying for power from the plant. So that's interesting. It's a renewable energy source, and JEA is going to go and charge more for that power. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what does that say about JEA's values?
John Burr, there's only about 500 rooftop solar consumers among JEA's overall customer base of nearly 500,000. It's a small group. It will get bigger over the years, but what
do
you think?
It's a small group, but, you know, this whole thing indicates how the solar power industry is maturing. And, you know, Florida's really behind the ball nationally in terms of solar power generation. In California, this is going great guns. And,
yeah.
You know, the utility industry, not only in Jacksonville, across Florida, across the United States, is scared to death of this development because they might be taken out of the electric power generation business if you talk about 20 to 30 years from now.
AG.
You know, JEA is at cross purposes here with what's actually going on in, you know, in the landscape, because you've got On one hand, they've got legacy costs, they've got infrastructure repair, they need that money coming in. On the other hand, conservation and renewable energy has been pushed for decades and decades. Now we're finally there to where it's more attainable. JEA wants to maintain control of the model. And, you know, they're going to build solar farms and things like that. I heard a discussion in Planning Commission yesterday about exactly that. But this is the thing. JEA's model is, you know, attempting to protect the legacy of things that happened in the past. It's sort of like with city pensions, sort of like with all these other issues. You've got basically... a need to protect the past at the expense of the present and the future.
Well, finally, it's our collection of strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous stories from the week. Luckily, there's never a shortage of material. Just one we're going to talk about today. Here it is for you right now. Only in Florida, the Starbucks edition. Now, only in Florida does the governor of the state get harassed and chased out of Starbucks. You knew this was going to happen sooner or later, right? A video went viral this week of a stay-at-home mom named Kara Jennings. She's a former Lake Worth city commissioner, yelling at Rick Scott at a Gainesville Starbucks, chastising the governor for his positions both on Medicaid and Planned Parenthood. She also swore at the governor. We edited that part out, but take a listen.
In fact, you cut Medicaid so I couldn't get Obamacare. You don't care about working people. I'm not talking to you. You don't care about working people. You should be ashamed to show your face around here.
We got a million jobs.
A million jobs? Great. Who here has a great job?
You should.
Or is looking forward to finishing school? You really feel like you have a job coming up? You stripped women of access to public health care. Shame on you, Rick Scott. We depend on those services. Rich people like you don't know what to do. When poor people like us need health services, you cut them. Shame on you, Rick Scott. You're an embarrassment to our state.
That wasn't nice.
That was
some chai tea latte.
Now, let me ask all of you your opinion about this. Of course, roughly half the state agreed with Kara Jennings, probably half didn't. When it comes to how Rick Scott has governed, what are your thoughts about the argument that whether or not you disagree with Rick Scott, and you can, of course, vehemently disagree with his policies, is it right to disrespect the office in that way? AG.
She was going to get one shot at that. You know, it's like a clear kick on goal to say exactly what she thought about Rick Scott, about the issues with Medicaid expansion and, you know, Florida's noncompliance with federal guidelines in the Affordable Care Act. And the reality is this, people are falling through the donut hole. The very poor get health care. The very rich get health care. But those who are lower, middle class, working, they are struggling and struggling and struggling. That's what she was speaking to. So if Rick Scott doesn't want to hear stuff like that, here's a suggestion. Don't go in public.
Mark Woods.
I have mixed emotions. You know, I could be glib or whatever, but clearly I'm not a big Rick Scott fan, but I don't know that I go, you know, my gut impulse is all that you go. But, you know, I stop and think about it. I'm not sure I want us headed down that path, but I will say I saw a Tallahassee columnist said, compared it to the Westboro Baptists, and it's no different than that. And I thought, well, it is different. You know, those were people out protesting, holding up signs at, you know, military funerals, God hates this and that, and this is
anti-gay
a public,
protests,
right?
Yeah.
And you know, this is a public official that should be willing to take some heat when they go out in public. But having said that, I don't really want us to head down that path where every time a public official we don't like gets screamed at in public.
John Burr.
I don't have a problem with it. I think, you know, the governor, by and large, and any governor, gets pats on the back just about everywhere they go. So if they hear a little heat once in a while, I don't have a problem with it. The worst part of the whole incident was the poor guy didn't even get his coffee.
He walked out without his coffee.
He got hustled out of the store by his agent, and the governor didn't
no
get
latte
his
for you.
Fix.
I mean, he governs the people of Florida, so personally I don't have a problem with her taking issue with the way he governs and even her very strong reaction. I mean, he lives in the ivory tower. Like John said, he goes around glad-handing and having people tell him how great he is all day long, except for maybe in the press, and it's good for these politicians to actually hear from real people that don't like them, how they feel, even if it's a strong emotion. I mean, maybe it sunk in.
Yeah.
Well.
Maybe.
Maybe. at any rate, we always appreciate your insights. For real people on this panel, John Burr, A.G. Gankarski, Claire Goforth, and Mark Woods, coming out for our special On the Go show today. I hope you'll stay a little while if you can and listen to some of the speakers here. We so appreciate you being here. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
And we're back in a moment with more of our special live broadcast from UNF's Generation W. Keep listening.
Hi, this is Jessica Evans, a proud board member of WJCT. It's time to give. When you donate now to WJCT, you are supporting all of your favorite public radio programming, and you're also helping us shorten our pledge drive. Our promise to you is that we'll end this fundraiser as soon as we hit our $80,000 goal. Plus, the earlier you give, the better your chances of winning in our prize drawings. Learn more by visiting WJCT.org or by calling 904-353-9528.
Relax Radio, playing the soundtrack of your life nightly at midnight, only on 89.9 FM WJCT. Your community, your world.
Memories press between the pages of my mind. Memories sweeten through the ages just like.
Big day at the job. Make it break time. They're all waiting for you right now in the conference room. Well, they're going to have to wait because you're not leaving the radio until you hear the end of that story. Snap Judgment from NPR. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
From the moment you wake up, through the chaos of your busy morning, Morning Edition is there with you.
Good morning, I'm Steve Inskeep. Protesters have been
through
marching.
All you have to do, we'll bring you all you need to know tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on 89.9.
Welcome back to First Coast Connect, live and on the go this morning from UNF's Generation W event. We are here for the full hour today from this premier women's leadership conference, the fifth annual event, genwnow.com, for more information. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. And, you know, this spring, every Friday on the program, we're giving you some ideas for one-tank trips. Interesting places around our region you can visit on just one tank of gas, places you might not have heard of. We're pleased to welcome right now writers Megan Massian and Francesca Russo. They're with UNF's One Tank Media Project. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
All right, so where are you taking us this week? Megan, give us your one tank.
Well, about a few weeks ago, I visited Stephen C. Foster State Park, which is on a 402,000 National Wildlife Refuge, the Okefenokee.
Uh-huh.
And I was able to travel through the swamp by boat, which was an amazing experience. You can camp there, you can rent a campsite or a cabin. It's definitely affordable, especially to go with a few friends.
Sure.
I wouldn't go if you're petrified of alligators, though. officials actually estimate there's about 12,000 on the refuge, so we saw a lot of those traveling through the swamp by boat. It's definitely a great experience. I would recommend it. Anyone who loves the outdoors, loves to camp.
Sure, and that's just due west of here on I-10, isn't it?
Yep, it's about an hour and a half away from Jacksonville, so it's a really easy trip. Even if you just wanted to go for the day, they have different events, like archery classes, different workshops and whatnot. So.
And a state park, so it's affordable. It's something people can easily check out.
Yes.
Yeah. And so close by. Francesca Russo, you went somewhere else for this week's one tank trip.
I did. I went to Blue Cypress Golf Course to play foot golf. And it was absolutely incredible. It was
really
So foot golf, what it is it's a mixture of soccer and golf, but it's more golf than soccer. So instead of swinging a golf club, you use your leg and kick a ball.
And you've never done that before?
I've never
heard of that before.
Exactly. It's actually huge. It's in 48 states. It's in Puerto Rico. It's in Canada, and it's huge, and it's super affordable, and it's so much, I think it's more fun than golf.
And where's Blue Cypress?
So Blue Cypress is actually, it's in Jacksonville. It's just a little north of the university.
Oh, okay. So when you come up with places to visit for this One Tank Media project, and by the way, the website is onetankmedia.com, how do you hit upon locations? How do you decide where to go?
Word of mouth, really. When I go on Instagram, different travel websites, I'll see different springs, different parks, pretty much word of mouth, and different social media outlets is where I find my ideas.
People comment on our Facebook all the time and tell us different places we should go check out, and that's just kind of how we figure it out.
Where are you headed next week? Don't know yet.
No.
It could be anywhere. And the whole appeal of this, of course, is anybody can do a tank, well, just about anybody with a car can do one tank of gas. And you're trying to pick places that are in this 100-mile radius and affordable, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And you guys have gone up into Georgia, too, I believe.
Yeah, we go as far north as Georgia. I've been as far west as Gainesville. We go past St. Augustine South, so...
Well, it's a great project, and UNF's One Tank Media project is one example of all the talent here among the student body. Of course, we're live from the UNF campus this morning, which is a lot of fun. Writers Megan Massian and Francesca Russo with us again. Their website, onetankmedia.com. Check it out for some ideas. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And much more still to come on this special live broadcast from Generation W. We'll be right back.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
I'm Al Letson, and I'm hosting a brand new show here on WJCT, and I'm bringing some friends with me.
Aerothang, with Al Letson as the host and Willie Evans Jr. as the DJ. Well, he's not really a DJ, but he does something.
Every week, we'll be bringing you some stories, some laughs, and something to think about. Sundays at 2 and Wednesdays at 1. Aerothang. It's a new show, because we're going to do everything we want.
Aerothang. The opposite of nothing.
Join WJCT at the Timucua National Ecological and Historic Preserve on April 16th to explore the outdoors. Kids will have the opportunity to become a National Park Junior Ranger, hunt for nature treasures, win prizes, and more. Curious George will be on hand with Main Metal Recycling, teaching families how to recycle. This fun family event is free and runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Go to wjct.org/events for more information.
On the road or at home, chill out with the Electro Lounge, only on 89.9, Tuesday to Saturday nights.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening to First Coast Connect. On the go this morning, live for the full hour from the UNF Fine Arts Center. We are here for the 5th annual Generation W Women's Leadership Conference, and it's been such a pleasure. Thanks for sticking with us through this full hour as we do our show, but on the go. Now, we want to talk about the arts. The St. John's Cultural Council is surveying the community right now about its vision for the arts in the area, and they need your feedback. Nadia Ramatar of the St. John's Cultural Council joins us now. Good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning. No better woman to be on the go than you, right?
Oh, you as well.
I know.
You're always on the go. So,
I know.
So you just did a 7-part visioning session with the entire community about the arts in St. John's County and what came out of that.
Well, it was really fascinating. I was hired in October, Melissa, to work part-time with the local arts program. And like many communities in Florida, a lot of our efforts have gone towards the tourist experience when it comes to the arts and heritage, because that's what's funded. Mm-hmm. So my challenge is to create a local arts program directly to the experience of local artists and local residents. And obviously, we would love for tourists to enjoy it as well. But the focus of my job is a little different. So when I started out, I looked at a lot of other communities and what they were doing. And I also looked at what was unique about St. John's County. Obviously, we've got Hastings, Ponte Vedra, you know, Bartram Trail. We've got St. Augustine. So you've got some diverse population there. So instead of me doing the academic, intellectual thing and saying, you know what you people need? You need this. We decided to do something kind of different and go to the community and offer sessions in which they could come and we could listen. Mm-hmm. So what we did 7 of those, and then what we did is we took the main issues that came from those 7 sessions and we put them into a community service that survey that is going on right now. And I was so fortunate. A woman named Diane Mataraza was a good friend with the executive director Andy Witt of the Cultural Council, and Andy put Diane and I together and he said, I think you're just really going to like this woman. And she and I created this whole vision process and survey. So now we are actively seeking input from audience and people in the community, and also from the artists themselves to tell us, like you're, you know, with your filmmaking experience, Melissa, and your radio experience, it's like, how do we make a living is one of the biggest questions artists want to know.
Sure.
And what venues are available to me, and, you know, how can I be relevant? So these are really difficult questions. You would think with social media that people would have an easier time, but it's almost harder because it's almost harder to be found, you know, to be relevant.
How can people be part of this survey? Because it ends next week on April 15th.
Well, let me tell you what they've done is we were trying to reach 2,000 people, and unfortunately we've got about 400 right now, so we're going to extend that deadline. But if people want to go to the St. John's Cultural Council Facebook page, we've got the survey right there. They can hit it. Or stjohnsculture.com, and please do that. If there's any problem with any of those methods, if they want to email me at information@stjohnsculture.com, I will send them the personal link and they can do it themselves.
Get on there right now, especially if you're a St. John's County supporter of the arts. That survey ends April 15th. Nadia Ramatar, thanks for coming out
thanks
to UNF
so much.
Today
it's
to
a
share
joy.
It with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We'll be right back with more live from UNF's Generation W event. Back in a moment.
WJCT is your source for thoughtful journalism and conversations that matter to our lives and our community. This is Michael Boylan. When you donate to WJCT.org, you support everything you love about this station. And you can help us shorten the pledge drive. We will stop our on-air fundraising as soon as we reach our $80,000 goal. And if we can do that before April 9, we will skip our regular drive altogether. Join us. Give us a call. 904-353-9528. And thanks.
WJCT and Baptist Health are pleased to announce that Amy Robach, news anchor of ABC's Good Morning America, will be this year's afternoon keynote speaker at Girls' Day Out, September 17, 2016, Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Amy is also a breast cancer awareness advocate and author of My Breast Cancer Journey, From Fighter to Thriver. For more information or for tickets, log on to wjct.org/girlsdayout.
Coming to
to PBS from filmmaker Ken Burns.
Jackie Robinson was a superstar, but it wasn't enough.
Baseball was a bridge to the civil rights movement, so he said, I'm going to speak out.
He had a kind of fury in him.
Jackie Robinson took on everything we were afraid to face and changed the entire country.
If you only know the legend, you don't know the man. Jackie Robinson, a Ken Burns film. Starting Monday, April 11th at 9, 8 central. Only on PBS.
Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And we're the guys from Deemable Tech.
Hey, if you've got a question about your computer, mobile phone, tablet, or the internet.
And who doesn't?
We're here to help.
Join us Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on WJCT.
And check out our podcast online at deemable.com.
That's deemable.com.
And welcome back to First Coast Connect on the go, live from the Generation W event today. Thanks, audience. People clapping randomly. I love it. Finally, this hour, it's the Race to the Boat Show next Tuesday as the USS Adams Museum teams up with the Southeast U.S. Boat Show for an exciting race down the St. John's River, and this is a drop boat race. We're talking about little yellow rubber boats. If the number on your boat is the right one, you could win an incredible prize. Spokesman Joe Snowberger is here to tell us all about this. These are so much fun, Joe. Thanks for being here and coming out to UNF. What's going to be happening next Tuesday on the riverbank?
Well, first of all, it's a privilege to be in front of Melissa Ross.
And especially it's a privilege to be in front of you.
Well, especially at this great event, Generation W. As a veteran, I just came out of the military panel in there. What a fabulous presentation going on here at UNF.
It really is.
Let's talk about the USS Adams Museum Boat Race. The Freedom Boat Club, the Botanista, came to us and stepped up and is offering a free year of membership at the Freedom Boat Club, which means you just call them up and say, pick me a fishing boat, sailing boat, whatever. I'll be there and take it out. We're going to drop 16 of those little yellow boats in front of you in the river at 4 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon. They're going to float down, and the winner gets a free membership with Freedom Boat Club for a year. And we have about 75 other cool prizes like Ruth Chris gift certificates, JAG tickets, Sun tickets, Adventure Landing. It's a small fundraiser to bring home the Adams. We'll raise about $10,000 total, but the boat show people came to us. What a great crowd. Jimmy Hill and the Southeastern U.S. Boat Show, a fabulous event at Met Park.
Now, you can buy a ticket just $10 per boat. This is not a super high price ticket to buy one of these little boats and enter for a chance to win.
Absolutely. $10, ussadams.com/boat race. That's ussadams.com/boat race. Buy one, buy 10, share them with your employees, your neighbors, your friend, gift them to military folks in town. The odds are so cool that you win a prize. Absolutely.
It's going to look so great when you see all these little yellow miniature boats floating down the river at once.
Well, I'm excited about the big nets we're going to hold to scoop out the winners and call the numbers off and try. We'll announce the grand prize winners at the boat show. But the boat show people wanted me to invite everybody out to Metropolitan Park Tuesday, April 12th, 3:30 to 4 o'clock. We'll be doing the boat drop about 4:20. You'll be able to see everything from Metropolitan Park. The bands will be there. The oysters will be roasting. Pita Pit at the beaches is going to provide food. It's a great opportunity. Come down to Met Park on Tuesday afternoon.
And, of course, the overall goal, which you've been working on for some time, is to bring to the riverbank the retired USS Charles F. Adams. Turn that into a museum. Showcase the Navy presence in this area. This is all part of that.
Absolutely. We're on track to bring the Adams to Jacksonville this fall. We still have some fundraising to do. As you may have read recently, the state of Florida, the governor granted us $1 million, the very first public money we've ever received. Everything
That's
else
great.
Has been individually, privately donated. Corporations are starting to talk to us now because we've done all the homework. 7 years we've been at this. Individuals have done it. Now the companies are stepping up and realizing. So give us a call if you want to get involved to make the first attraction at the shipyards, done by citizens, open this year.
And this is where it will be docked, on the North Bank at the Shipyards parcel.
Right, at one of the piers right there at the Shipyards downtown. We're going to be open later this year with your help and citizens' help. And buying one of these boats at ussadams.com/boatrace helps us get there.
You know, Metropolitan Park is right next door to WJCT, so all of my coworkers, we can just walk right out
Absolutely.
To the Riverwalk. We can buy tickets ourselves, buy a little yellow boat for $10, and watch this race and be part of it. I think I'm going to have to buy a little drop boat.
Got some tickets right here, Melissa.
I know. I'm going to have to write you a check because this is too much fun, and it's for a great cause, the USS Adams Museum. Just go to their website, ussadams.com. Buy your ticket. This is coming up, as Joe said, next Tuesday at about 4 o'clock at Metropolitan Park.
And then the top 50 boats are going to get free passes to the boat show, and we'll announce the winner Saturday at 5 o'clock and all the other winners from the main stage.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming out to the UNF campus today and being part of our special live show out here, Joe. And again, that website is ussadams.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa. An honor.
And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. This show is produced by Sean Birch. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchik. We want your feedback. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. The podcast is at iTunes and Stitcher. And make sure to watch the show, video on demand, at metrojacksonville.com and tvjax.com. Diane Reams up next with a look at the week's top national news stories. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back at 9 a.m. Monday. Thanks to UNF and Generation W for hosting us this morning. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.